Well, hi there. Come on in and set a spell, won't you, friends? Here's that lovable First Lady of the Ozarks, Mae Kennedy McCord, ready to chat with you about this and that and the other in Ozark folklore and traditions, and generally speaking, to help brighten up your day on this Saturday. Oh, it's 29, Mae. Good morning, Mae.
Good morning, Fred. And I thought he said it was 49 degrees. And I said, well, Fred, that's warmer than I thought it was. It lacks a lot of being warm out. And good morning, friends, and thank you, Fred. I'm sorry to be so hoarse, but I've had the most fearful cold I ever had in my life, ever since last Saturday night when it began. I've not been very sick with it, and it was not flu, thank heaven, but it settled in my larynx. That's my talking apparatus, you know. And believe me, I've been so I could scarcely speak at times, and that's bad for me. I thought last night I wouldn't come to broadcast this morning, and the station had it all arranged that way for me. But last night I got the notion that I must try to come. I do so hate to miss and cause them a lot of trouble. Well, so here I am. So bear with me if I sound like a frog. I'm not sick, not now, and I don't believe this will do me any harm, and I'm much better and on the way to completely getting over it. I wasn't sick with the thing much at all, but I was pretty ornery, felt pretty ornery, and is in bed just part of the time. But it did give us a scare. Afraid it might go into the flu. This Asian flu has us all scared to death. I don't have colds very much, ever. I just always get hoarse. It affects my speaking apparatus if I do have a cold. I was always that way. And of course, that may be a good idea, because my friends get a rest then. You know, we women certainly can talk. There was an old chap of my childhood down home, and he said if he laid out late of nights, he always threw his hat in the door first when he got home. If his old woman kicked the hat out, he went on away. But if she didn't kick it out, then he went on in. And he said, you know, I never had to say a word. She said it all from there on out. I bet she did, too. Anyway, I'm going to take it easy. I want first to thank the dear good women for trading stamps, and God bless you for your kindness. I know you women don't like to give up your trading stamps too much. Women love trading stamps, and it always appears to me such a great sacrifice and a loving kindness. Leave it to women, though. That's the way they are. I've written a line to most of you. I've started to do that 3 or 4 weeks ago, every one of you, and I'll finish tonight. And Mrs. Wyman Eula is always so pleased. She comes and gets the stamps at my home each week. And her work is the real job, straightening them out and pasting the loose ones in books and so forth. She says the stamps all over the place. She's fixing and working all the time. Thank you, dear women, again. And I want to thank my listeners for Valentine's. My, I got several Valentine's, and they warmed my heart. And then for some other lovely Valentine gifts I got. You know, I forgot to mention Valentine Day coming on last Saturday, and I don't know how I came to forget it. It's a pity we don't have 100 Valentine Days a year. On the day when love, the greatest thing in the world, takes possession of our hearts and our memories. Valentine Day, it's a wonderful day. You know, the Bible says love is as strong as death. Isn't that a beautiful thing? In the Song of Solomon, love is as strong as death, but it also says right after it, jealousy is as cruel as the grave. And still we don't have enough love in the world. We're like the Berlin Wall. Oh, I read about it again last night. Makes me so sick. In memory, I think of those beautiful lines by the master poet Bourdelon. The mind has 1,000 eyes and the heart but one, yet the light of a whole life dies when love is done. And one of the most beautiful things in all the language is the famed sonnet by Elizabeth Barrett Browning, wife of the great poet Browning of England, when she tried to tell him how she loved him. That little crippled Elizabeth Barrett, whom he married in her wheelchair and worshipped her. And he had every beautiful woman in England hanging on his very breath. For he was young, handsome, rich, and England's most famous poet of his day. But he fell in love with this little, envious little crippled Elizabeth Barrett. She was a great poet herself, you know. She wrote this, which you have maybe read, and so I'm going to read it to you anyway for your Valentine. This was to her husband. How do I love thee? Let me, or to her lover, I think it was, before she. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I love thee to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach. I love thee to the level of every day's most quiet need by sun and candlelight. I love thee freely as men strive for right. I love thee purely as they turn from praise. I love thee with the passion put to use in my old griefs and with my childhood's faith. I love thee with the love I seem to lose with my lost saints. I love thee with the breath, smiles, tears of all my life. And if God choose, I shall but love thee better after death. You know, I wonder if we have any more of that kind of love in this old world nowadays. I have my doubts. As the Scotchman says, I hae my doots. February is indeed a great month, the month of heroes. I don't dare to even start talking about Abraham Lincoln, whose birthday was kept last Tuesday, the 14th, the 12th, I mean, or I would be here this time tomorrow. Well, it was last Tuesday. I never know dates. I'd be here this time tomorrow with a full heart if I started talking about the great martyr for whom the pale rider and horse came all too soon, as Carl Sandburg says. Then there's Thomas Edison, the man who lit the world with the arc light of electricity and invented the phonograph. He was born in February. You know, when Thomas Edison was a boy, the parents in school sent a note to his parents to keep him at home, and he didn't have any mind, said he was a dumbbell, an idiot or something. Thomas Edison, yes, that he couldn't learn. Think of that. And of course, there was the father of his country, the immortal George Washington. And yes, there's one, too, that we always forget when speaking of February, a chap who figures greatly, His Honor the Groundhog. Called a woodchuck in Boston and uppity places. You know, his real name's a woodchuck. You knew that, didn't you, Fred? Woodchuck me I. Well, anyway, he's a rodent of the rat family, and yet a wise old bird, wise enough to crawl back in a hole and mind his own business for a half a year at a time, and we don't have another chap in the country who'll do that. The only thing that worries me is what's he thinking about back in that hole. That always did worry me. Maybe it's none of my business. And then there are a lot of smart people born in February, and dear little Miss Rilla Abbott of Springfield, whose 108th birthday we celebrated last Tuesday, she was born on Lincoln's birthday. And did you see her picture in the Leader, and did you ever see a prettier little smiling woman with the latest hairdo and pretty dress on that she made? And if she looked 108, the heading in the paper says, does she look 108? If she looked 108, then I'm a Chinese cook. But she is 108. I told you last Saturday what a wonder she was and how pretty she was. And by the way, my baby boy was born on Lincoln's birthday. I celebrated the day February the 12th, 1913. I certainly did. He's born at 3 o'clock that afternoon. Now I want to send my love and congratulations to two old friends, Ira and Louise Thompson, Louisa she is really, of this city. We always called her Liza. On Newton Street, Ira and Louisa Thompson. They celebrate their 66th wedding anniversary tomorrow. When I was a gal, I was younger, and I used to tease Liza and Ira to death when they were courting. Up on the big Carbo farm up the river, beautiful big house with a long porch, one of the fine farms of that country, where I used to go and spend happy days with the big lovely family, and dear, they were our dear friends. My, what a time Liza and I had, and she was the prettiest brown-eyed girl you ever saw. I send my best love to you, Liza and Ira, and God bless you. I hope to see you tomorrow if I don't take a back set with this cold, and I don't think I will. Well, I have to laugh at the walking business the president has started. You going to walk, Fred? Really?
To the table.
Huh?
To the table.
To the table. He is under the ice box. He's eating right now. I'm in the farm. Yeah. Coughing. Rolls or something. Don't ask me. Well, anyway, he's going to walk to the table. And, you know, the president didn't intend to start it all over the country. But, you know, we Americans were just like monkeys. The old saying is, monkey see, monkey do. If someone else does a thing, we've got to do it, too. Well, the walking and the exercise is a fine thing if they don't overdo it. They say, you know, that automobiles, they say, Mayo brothers say that, the automobiles are what's brought on heart trouble in men in America. The bad killing and death of heart trouble started about that time. Because men ride everywhere, a half a block or less, they climb in the car. And walking is the finest exercise in the world for the heart. Don't you remember that? Remember how they put the president on golf, President Eisenhower, when he was in a terrible condition recovering. But these big fat men had better go at it slowly. I think the fad will die out before long. I'd try it myself. I'd love to if I had a new left knee, because I'm a walker. I used to get all the running prizes when I was a girl, too. I'm getting like the old chap that didn't want too big a farm. He was afraid he might get out over his head and get so far away he couldn't smell the meat of frying. That's me. The next thing, now they'll be trying their walking stunts barefooted as soon as warm weather comes. Well, you've missed half your life if you never felt the ground under your feet soft and warm, and never felt the dew on the clover, or never felt the mud oozing up between your bare toes, or dug your feet in the sand on the shoals of the creek at the foot of a cool hollow on a hot summer day. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with those Arkers anyway? They never had any wild urge to push the collar chasing industrial phantoms when I was a kid. And no particular quest for a veneered culture only skin deep. A hill feller in those days, as old Booth Campbell used to say, was a feller who hain't yet learned to be what he hain't. And that's about it. Whether the early hill man wore shoes or not, he had within him a something not nurtured on brick sidewalks or in tight dude shoes. He had a virility added to a native intelligence which made for men and not mice, sure as shooting. Well, my time's up. And I'll be seeing you next Saturday, the Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.